Good evening, and welcome back, dear viewers. We hope that you have been enjoying the film so far. The riveting classic, Cult of Abaddon, now conveniently delivered to your home through the latest technology that has been recently developed over the years that are close to our present time. And yet, naturally, there are some issues brought to light. Only through the exposé of our most recent transmission of the episode that came out just before this one. The chilling first episode in this series that is now about to continue. As your pulse increases with tension of the horrific scenes and terror beyond that which you did not expect to experience through such a medium, perhaps your mind is indeed starting to wander, wishing for the comfort of spy films instead and soft drama. But don't let your impulses and personal interpretations fool you. A team being sent out after the Prime Minister's missing son. Terror awaits. The art of film has been heightened into new technicolor developments with a slow lull, the mundane giving way to the facade of normalcy that lies beneath. This, of course, is highlighted by the previous scene. What begins as an almost mundane investigation into the local university campus ends in sudden and brutal horror. As the mundane gives way to the facade, what can come to reflect the true nature that hides beneath it? In our last episode, a poor innocent victim, their life ended by a strange dart to the neck. Our heroine, Tracy Taylor, seems caught off guard by this sudden moment of violence. But what awaits the cunning Professor Reginald Fortesque and sullen but loyal Davis Jones as they conduct their own investigation? What shall be revealed to our heroes as the story continues? We will most certainly find out as we return to the esteemed work of director Matthew Dawkins, The Cult of Abaddon. This is Red Moon Roleplaying.
You head over to whose accommodation first?
Personally, I think we should go to the Mr. Wilson's accommodation, because if we find anything there, that's evidence we could present to the girlfriend. Who we don't realise is dead. Ask her to explain any of it.
Okay, you head over to the Brunel block and Gregory Wilson's accommodation. The door is closed. There's no other students in the corridor.
I will look to the professor and say, Would you like me opening the door, sir?
Yes, if you wouldn't mind. You'll step back.
And I shall go forward and do my best to subtly force this door open.
If you're using subtlety, I'd ask you to use larceny and might as opposed to close combat and might.
So, free dice.
Remember, you can use your quips and trademarks too, if appropriate, or entertaining.
Not just yet. Let's see how I do with free dice. 1-8.
Can I assist him?
You can.
I've got an idea that the professor knows something about leverage and hinges and the way physics works. And as he looks at this particular kind of door, although that sort of thing is beneath him, he applies the science in his brain as he looks at it. And he says, the trademark, this isn't strictly ethical, but... And he points out the sort of weak points in the locking mechanism and the ways he can... sort of maneuver himself in to get the door open more quietly and more effectively.
Okay, so you're going to use your science and intellect to assist, so roll that, please.
Okay.
See whether you can give him some enhancements.
8 of the finest dice. Ooh, that's a lot of successes. There's 2 10s and there's an 8, so that is 5.
No need for you to use your cheap set cinematic then, because the door pops open almost off its hinges as the professor instructs you, Davis, to lift as you push slightly. The door flies open quietly, and what you see is an apartment that has been turned over.
Hi, sir. It looks like somebody's already beaten us to it.
Could you both go for larceny and cunning, please?
Larceny. I don't have larceny.
Well, just cunning will have to do. What you're doing is observing the room to see what immediately stands out.
Oh, that's a 9 and a 10.
I, on the other hand, get a 3, as I say, literally, say to the professor as he's already gone in, "Aye, sir, it looks like we've already been beaten to the punch. Looks like someone's been messing around the room looking for things."
As you got a failure, Craig, that means you gain an additional rewrite, so now there's 4 rewrites in the pool. But John, the professor, you do take things in, and what you can tell, more than what has been turned over, is how recently it's been done. You can tell because there's a fish tank that has been knocked off of its table, and the water from the tank has not dried yet. In fact, some of it's still dripping. You think this place has been ransacked probably within the last couple of hours.
Are the fish still flopping around in the ground, or is it like dead?
Oh no, the fish are dead. Sadly, you don't have Tracy with you to utter that quip.
There's something fishy about this scene. The professor will sort of stroke his chin in the time-honoured tradition and say, "Yes, it would appear so. Recently, it seems. The floor here is still wet with the water from this aquarium."
"How recently do you think that would be, sir?"
"I'd expect no more than an hour or so."
I frown as I just, again, go to... Are there any windows in this room?
There is a single window on the opposite side, yes.
I go to the window, open it, and again just start looking outside. As I do so, I mutter towards the professor, "You mark my word, sir. They're spying on us. Watching. Waiting. Activating one of my quips."
Keep that in mind so you gain an additional die for your next roll, which you may want to make now. I'm going to ask you, and it seems to be the skill of the day, to make a larceny. I know you're not usually the right person for this, but a larceny and intellect, please. Davis.
Well, that would be one dice, but I guess I get a second dice due to...
You do get a second die. Remember, if you want to take an automatic failure, you gain yet another rewrite.
Well, I only got 2 5s, so it's a failure anyway.
Ah, that's fine. Now you have 5 rewrites. You probably want to start using them.
And you just see me squinting through the little window just at anything, really.
Well, while this is going on, the professor will be more interested in what, you know, I take it that the rooms look totally ransacked, as if they've searched every nook and cranny kind of thing, or are they particularly targeting certain areas, certain kinds of things, like only looking through the books and the files and that sort of stuff?
So what the professor is able to ascertain looking around the room is actually something quite curious. You don't think this place has been burglarized so much as searched for specific items, and you think that the aquarium probably fell off its moorings by accident. It doesn't look like anyone's rifled through the bedding at the bottom of it, you know, to find a hidden key or anything like that. It just looks like it's been knocked, at which point you can see there are footprints heading toward the window of the accommodation, although they are largely dry. It looks like someone was looking for something and maybe got disturbed after they knocked the fish tank down.
"It looks like they went this way," he says, indicating the footprints. "And perhaps exited through that window at which you now stand." But he has a thought that if they didn't rifle through the sort of bedding of the aquarium, that maybe he should see if there's anything in there. If that's a place that they didn't look, you know, naturally, if they didn't find what they were looking for.
That is indeed true. You're not going to need to roll for that. You basically sift your fingers through. Sadly, you do not find anything. That was an inspired idea.
"Well, my mother always did tell me I had to get my hands dirty someday."
"Aye, sir. Sometimes in life we do need to get our hands dirty. But as long as it's the Lord's work, it's a righteous dirt."
"Yes," he says, something not particularly bothered about this zealotry, but he'll sort of, I suppose, resume the search that these people were broken off from. "I do believe our friend has been disturbed from his search. Maybe we can find what they could not."
At this point, do I perhaps, as I'm looking out the window, maybe now hear the sound of sirens?
Yes, although you're not on campus ground so much as Tracy was or is. So it's a little distance away.
In that case, I just frown a little. And I go around the room trying to help the professor look, but again, I'm not very subtle, just sort of opening drawers and upending things.
I would like to ask what you're looking for, if there's anything in particular. It's all very well picking through the ruins of a room, but unless you know something that you're looking for or the kind of thing you're looking for, you're not going to find it.
Yeah, the professor's looking for anything that would be connected to the occult, anything indicating the membership of any sort of societies, that sort of thing.
And what about Davis? Is he looking for anything in particular?
I was going to look for the same, although in my case I'm not very good at knowing what that is when it comes to things, but I know from working with the professor the sort of things to be looking out for that he then knows are interesting.
In that case, both of you make enigmas and intellect roll, please. In fact, I think, Davis, you can go for enigmas and cunning.
That is an 8 and a 10, so 3 successes.
And remember, you... you've already spent your quip, so forget what I was about to say. An 8 and a 10, that's still good.
It's not as good as the 8, the 9, and the 2 10s.
I'd like this to almost be framed as, Professor, look! I found something! And then you...
My dream turnip.
Okay, Professor. What you are able to find is a family photo beside the bed, and you can see good old Harold Wilson there, Prime Minister, his wife, 2 sons, and... You can see there is a bit of a protuberance from the photo. And you wouldn't have noticed it as unusual. It could have just been a screw in the photo frame. Except with that many successes, it looks amazingly like a star shape.
It seems our friend, the Prime Minister, is slightly overweight, and he'll try to access it.
This is not the same thing that Davis found. We'll get to you in a second, Davis. So, Professor, you undo the back of the photo frame, and indeed, there is a small medallion with a many-pointed star. You count 12 points on the end of it. And yes, it is a symbol you recognise of occult significance.
He'll sort of like hold it in his hand and he'll stare wistfully off, you know, to the left of the camera shot and say, "These are the tools of superstition and fantasy." Which is indeed one of his quips.
Yeah, lovely use of a quip again.
And in fact, I'm going to burn a rewrite and have a bolt of lightning strike as he says that.
I fully agree.
I'm going to further that, and as the bolt of lightning comes down, the skies open and the rain starts to pour. Now, Davis, you likewise found something. Usually you wouldn't be on the lookout for much in the way of written material, but you just happened to be by Gregory's desk when your eyes caught something. You wouldn't have paid it a second glance, except for that crossword earlier that you heard the professor and the secretary discussing. It was that word stayed in your mind. Demo. Demo. You're looking at a letter that seems Gregory was partway through writing, and it's mostly nonsense. It seems to be just a letter to a friend, you think. But you put your hand over the body of the text, and you see that from the deer at the top to the "now I must go" at the bottom, that the first letter of each paragraph spells out "demon."
I frown as I square my jaw a little, the lightning flashing, the rain starting to come down, and I hear you speak, Professor, and I come over, showing you the letter, and say, Aye, Professor. Lord protect us. This be the work of devilry. It's my thinking anyway.
Then Mr. Wilson's lady friend may be in grave danger indeed.
You think? Aye, you might be right. We should be getting back to the, to Miss Taylor. She could be in danger.
Yes, let us waste no time.
Okay. I'm going to state that the three of you are able to meet up at a prearranged place.
Good thing we thought of that.
Yeah, it's almost as if the movie caters for this kind of thing. You meet on the corner closest to, equidistant from the student block and the common area. From the looks of it, as you stand in the rain, Tracy has had quite a fright.
My hair is almost flat to my skull from the downpour, and kind of shivering, but you can almost tell that it's just not shivering from the cold that the rain brought, but there's something else amiss.
Miss Taylor, whatever's the matter? You look a little flustered.
Yes, I believe Miss Jackson has ran into some serious trouble. As in, she is dead.
Dead? How on earth did that happen?
Very, very gently pull out the little feathered arrow, or dart, sorry, the little feathered dart that I'm carrying in my pocket. I look around, make sure no one else sees it, and I show it to you.
Miss Taylor, would you mind carefully passing me that?
It's most probably poisoned, I would say.
And I begin looking it over. I'm no man of science, not like the professor, but I am a man of survival. And well, I can sniff out a poison at 20 paces. So I'm going to see if I'd like to try using my survival skill with something to see if maybe I can learn something from this poison dart.
Yes, could you use your survival and I think I'm going to ask for your stamina, please.
Oh, lovely. And that gets a bonus dice because of the trademark, yes?
You gain 2 dice for using your trademark of smelling out poisons.
That is a 10 and an 8, 3 successes.
Excellent. You would recognise that smell anywhere. That's the smell of the Brazilian wandering spider's venom. Why, you know it so intimately, it could be the smell your grandmother used as perfume. It wasn't.
Hi, Professor. Have a look at this. Brazilian spider venom. This is very... Well, let's just say you can't get this down the local convenience store, if you know what I mean.
So whoever wanted the lady dead is clearly very well resourced.
Professor... Do you recognise the feathers?
He'll examine the object, see if he can see anything about it that catches his eye. Actually, I'm going to say, let's examine this from a scientific perspective. And use my intellect, if you don't mind.
Yes, of course. And in fact, science and intellect works just as well. The natural world.
So, 2, 6, 9, 9, 5. So, hold on. I've got 2 8s, 2 9s, and a 10.
Wow, okay. So, yeah, we're not getting too many failures in this game, but that's fine.
It's 8 dice, in fairness.
You think you can recognise every damn feather on this thing? Yes, some of them are exotic and imply origins from the Amazon. However, those yellow feathers are naught but common from the... average, everyday budgerigar.
While the poison and certainly these parakeet feathers are very exotic indeed, these are very common budgerigar feathers. Can be found in any local pet store. What was the name of that society they said he belonged to? Was it Colonial Club?
Aye, sir, I do believe it was the Colonial Club.
I suspect them to be gentlemen of means.
Do you think they have an aviary at this establishment?
I am unsure, but certainly there would be people there with the money, and possibly who are well-travelled enough to have gained access to these particular ingredients.
And so, are you heading to the Colonial? Or is there further doings that you wish to do at the university?
I personally reckon we should be going to the Colonial Club soon as. After all, our perpetrator may just be running back there now.
I would like to do one thing before we leave, if you don't mind.
Of course, sir.
He's going to take the sort of necklace medallion thing, and he's going to go to the library and see if he can cross-reference that symbol and see if there's any reference to it in any texts that he's aware of.
Okay, this is effectively a montage scene. We're not going to linger too long in the library. What we're going to assume is that the professor goes through stacks of books. We see him scratching his head. He's poring through paper. What are the other two of you doing while he's doing this in the montage?
I think actually Tracy would like to seek out this Tom and try to make sure he doesn't tell of her inquiries and her little larceny from before.
Okay. I like the idea that interspersed with this montage, there's you find him quite shaken, your hands on his arm, you know, you're saying, it's all right, no, it's okay, and he's nodding and he's a bit scared, but eventually he develops that stiff upper lip, and...
And of course, we're still on for that drink later, of course.
And yeah, by the end of the consoling process, you have given him a reason to smile and laugh. And what about Davis? What's he doing during the montage?
I feel you'll just see Davis opening the boot of the car that we use. I'm probably the driver, makes sense. And you just see me checking the boot and then taking out quickly one police baton, equipping that, and one small gun, which I do indeed have a license for. And all that being sort of quickly pocketed, put into my belt, and covered up, of course, by my large overcoat that I have, which is a nice white overcoat. I actually all dress in white underneath my quite smart suit attire.
Very good. Here's what you find, Professor, through your researching, that the star is associated with the dread Lord Abaddon.
I knew it.
Unfortunately, we've already used dramatic meteorology in this game, and until we use the rest of the cinematics, dramatic meteorology will not be making a reprisal. But if we had it, that would have been another fine occasion for lightning. As it is, the rain has not stopped.
So in lieu of there being any lightning, as he sees that passage in the book and the symbol in front of himself, his eyes come up from the pages to again look off into whatever it is he's looking off into when he has these little moments, and he slams the book shut in his hands and slams it down onto the table in front of himself, creating an almost lightning-like effect, and storms out of the library to find the other two.
Nice. The actor is his own Foley artist. And then you go to the Colonial as a group. You arrive at the Colonial Club, the downpour continues into the evening, and it is about 9 o'clock in the evening after you've done your little library trip. You're wondering, Tracy, if you are going to get to see Tom tonight before the evening's out. You gave him a loose time and location. He said he would go to this pub anyway, but you know that he was going to get his hopes up that you would arrive. The fact that crosses your mind, Davis, is going into an establishment like this, and you've been into establishments like this before, is one, you aren't by many means a gentleman, and for another, this is the kind of place monsters in human skin tend to hang out, conservative politicians and the like. As for you, Professor, this is very much your kind of shindig.
Ah, yes, the Conservative Party, my favourite.
He claps his hands together and rubs them vigorously.
Would it be strange if I suggested maybe for this scene we use small set to condense everything into one singular room?
I actually have an idea for that. So I don't know. I'm keen on holding.
Oh, okay.
On to that.
No, that's cool. Let's hold it then.
You bear in mind, if you burn through all of your cinematics, you can get small set again.
Yeah, we want dramatic meteorology back.
We don't have enough rewrites to cash them all in anyway, and we're not failing enough dice rolls to come on.
Okay, so you arrive at the Colonial Club. There's a foyer just on the inside where you can hang your coats and bags and the like. But before you can actually get into the club proper, there is a tall man. He's got dark skin. He has a register in front of him. He looks at you three lazily. Are you members?
Am I a member of this club, Benny Jones?
That's a good question. Is one of your connections a member of the Colonial Club?
Dr. Alan Trotter.
He is a member of the Colonial Club.
Yes, I am with Dr. Alan Trotter.
Of course. Professor, isn't it?
Indeed.
And these are your friends?
Yes, they're with me.
Hi, pleasure to meet you.
Of course, you may go in. Although it's uncommon to bring... lady friends within. It is a Saturday night.
Ah, well, we seek only truth, no matter where it takes us.
He looks at you quizzically and gestures for you to go through the curtained-off door.
You nod and head on in, leading the way. Now, he will say to them as they walk, you know, kind of quietly, "Now, it is important to comport yourselves in the proper fashion in here. This is not the Swan."
Aye, sir. I promise to be the model of civility.
But you can't be talking to me, are you? No.
Of course not, dear.
As you pass through the curtain, you find yourself in the traditional gentleman's club. Lots of middle-aged to elderly fellows sitting around smoking pipes, drinking very expensive whiskey. Some of them being quite bawdy and loud, others speaking low about matters of international politics. There's a small gaming table where some people are playing a bit of whist, and there's a well-stocked bar as well. A slender fellow with thick sideburns mans the bar. Professor, as you've been here before, you know some of these personalities. I wouldn't say that the Colonial is your regular, by any means. You know this place through Dr. Trotter, who you're no longer on good terms with after what he disgraced you in the papers and all that. But you have been here before. And as you pointed out earlier, something of note, there is not an aviary, but there is a budgie in a cage above the left corner of the bar. It's the motto, if you're not motto, it's the lucky...
The mascot.
Mascot, yes. It's the mascot of the Colonial. The Colonial budgie. Every January they perform some kind of Bullingdon ritual with the poor bird. And if it survives, it gets to live another year.
Ah, oh, that budgie. It's been down Colonel Jessup's trousers more times than you would believe, let me tell you.
And that is a story we don't want to hear.
It is absolutely not a story you want to hear, I'm afraid. Neither does the bird.
I don't know, I'm partial to a good story myself, sir.
Yes, but this is most definitely not a good story.
Still, I reckon that bird is the same sort of bird you were talking about before, weren't you?
Indeed, and the right colour. Is there someone in the building who's responsible for the bird when it's not being shoved down Colonel Jessup's trousers?
It would actually be the staff, so the barman would be a good place to start.
Well, perhaps, Miss Taylor, you can once more work your particular charms on our friend at the bar over there and see if he's seen anyone interfering with, what shall we call it?
Chirpy.
With the Lord Chirpington the Third.
Lord Chirpington the Third?
Yes, don't ask.
I assure you I won't. I kind of shake my head, try to straighten out my hair a bit, and then With a broad smile, I walk over to the bar.
He doesn't hide the fact that he looks you up and down. You are a woman, after all.
I think I actually take advantage of this attention and kind of, you know, try to stand in a bit more alluring pose.
Baby sham, small glass of wine. What does the lady want to drink?
Well, what do I have to order to get some information and on the side?
What kind of information are you looking for, ma'am?
Oh, nothing. Grand, just... Let's say I have my heart beats deeply for birds.
He looks over at the budgie. Yeah, you're not the only person in this club that said that.
Yeah? I understand it's the club's mascot.
That's right. At least this one is. Last one was as well.
Last one?
Yeah, you know, where they get through them more ways than one.
The Lord's Chirpington 1 and 2, that'll be what he's referring to.
So I just... Well, let's say I'm just a concerned patron here and just wants to make sure that the bird is taken care of well enough.
Oh, no, you're not one of these RSPB protection of birds thing. Look, they've knocked on our door before. The birds are well looked after. They have a perfect life all but for one day.
Dear sir, I assure you I'm not. It's more that I would want to know who's usually handling the bird, and if there's anyone who isn't authorized to handle the bird have been doing some handling lately.
Well, everyone in the bar at some point or other handles the bird, but for day to day and night to night, it's more the duty of the bar staff, the door people, the cleaners. We take it in turns. We've got a rota for making sure the bird's cage is clean and that he stays fed and watered. He doesn't often leave the cage, to be honest, unless it's on a special day.
And is he molting a lot?
No. Lord Chirpington III hasn't lost many of his feathers yet. Usually it takes a bit of a shock for that to happen, and so far he's avoided that.
And sorry for the weird question, but does anyone, like, usually take his feathers?
He is leaning in as you're saying this, and then he backs up, raises his eyebrows.
I said it's a weird question. I'm sorry, it's so silly of me.
It's funny you're asking this. Who did you say you were?
Oh, I'm Miss Taylor. Course. I'm with them, I say, and I just pointed a general direction of the professor and Davis, but I might just be pointing at anyone in here.
You're going to have to do a persuasion and manipulation, I think.
Let's see.
Don't forget those quips.
No, I know, but there's really nothing I can use now, is there? Let's see, I think 8 dice are enough, though. Oops, one went on the floor. I'll re-roll. And that's 1 8 and a 9, just.
Just. He nods slowly. Yeah. Lord Alton over there. As I said, it's funny you're asking. It's not Lord Alton himself, you understand. It's his butler. I saw him fiddling around with the cage the other day, and I might have been mistaken, but I was sure he was trying to pull a feather or two out of the bird. And I said to him, "What are you doing to Lord Chirpington?" He said, "Fly fishing."
Fly fishing? Oh.
Yeah, you know, baits, lures, things like that. You sometimes attach feathers to them, I'm told.
Well, I must say you are mighty perceptive, aren't you?
Well, you know, there's not much to look at when you're here. Well, it wasn't until tonight anyway.
No, I guess you don't get many women in here.
Nah, not often, not unless they're booked.
I don't want to know.
Oh, I mean caterers.
Ah, okay, of course. A gentleman's club would never have anything else but caterers.
Well, we got the budgerigar for everything else.
Which brings us nicely on to Lord Chirpington the Fourth, I think.
Okay. I smile and I thank him for the help and you know, I try to be as flirty as I can and I take my drink and walk over to the others.
So what did you find out, Miss Taylor?
It seems that Lord Alton's butler was fiddling about the cage the other day, trying to yank some feathers out of Lord Chirpington the Third.
Is he still here now?
He did indicate which one was Lord Alton.
He did?
Yeah, I motioned towards a gentleman sitting, probably reading a paper and smoking a cigar.
Does the gentleman, as I look over, is he by himself or is there a butler nearby?
There's no butler nearby, but you can see he is sat with some others. Men of similar age and standing, you think.
Do I know anything about Lord Alton by reputation?
If not deed. Let's go for... I think this would be a good opportunity for you to use culture and intellect, please.
Not that cultured. But I do remember the things that I am cultured in. I hope. Oh, no, that is a failure.
Excellent. Your rewrites have gone back up to 5.
Huzzah!
But no, you have never encountered Lord Alton before. You may have read his name in the newspaper once.
I'm afraid the gentry don't often fraternise with the academics. I don't know too much about him. He does come here often, though.
Well, sir, I suppose the question is, are you going to go over there now, show him the medallion and maybe get a reaction, or are we going to do this a different way?
I'm going to inspect the man and the people around him and see if any of them have any sort of paraphernalia or anything like that on their persons that I can see.
Let's go. In fact, I'm not going to make you roll for that. You can see with your own two eyes as you saunter on by. Lord Alton, on his little finger on his right hand, has a ring that bears the same star crest as the medallion that you found. Indeed, one of the others at the table bears the same ring. It's at that point that, coming through the curtain, you see, drenched wet, someone in butler's livery. You can see that he is freshly dressed, but his normally, well, you'd assume, neatly gelled hair. He's been caught in the rain, must have rushed from somewhere. He's all red in the face. He's got a small bag, leather bag, at his side. This man, who is rake thin, has a mustache that just covers the top lip and goes no higher, and eyes that are weaselly.
I'm going to nudge Mr. Jones and say, you couldn't by any chance see your way to obstructing that man.
Is he in stop him coming into the room, sir, or see him on the...
Perhaps a short, sharp bump that would see him dislodge the satchel which he's carrying.
Oh, yes, sir. I see.
And perhaps the contents may spill out.
I don't see what you mean. I will get up and very swiftly just begin marching to the exit, making to bump into this individual. Of course, being the size I am, a bump from me, deliberate, might be quite unpleasant for them.
Let's go for a close combat and might, please.
I'm going to help him to make it a little bit more subtle, because as he's approaching him, I'm going to go, "Oh, Mr. Jones," so that he can kind of turn his head as he sort of banjos him.
Yeah, I'm assuming you're not just walking up and punching him in the
No, exactly. It was more a sort of like a shoulder bump, but it's going to be quite hard.
Yeah.
You can tell I've done this before.
That is 4 successes, a 10, a 9, and an 8.
Wow, okay. And, yeah, I'm not going to make you roll, John. I think that assist is good enough to make it look discreet. And so, yeah, you collide with the butler, and the leather bag does go flying out of his hands. He goes, "Ah!" and falls over to the carpet. "What are you doing, you fool?"
"Oh, my apologies, sir. I did not see you there. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm such a clumsy individual." And I go to assist him in doing so, manhandling him ever so slightly, and hoping that gives even more an opening for if anyone wanted to go and look at that suitcase. Or pick it up, at least.
Is one of the other two of you going to go for the bag while this is happening, or were you hoping that Davis was?
I'm going to add to the distraction, certainly. I'm going to go over there and be like, "Oh, I'm so terribly sorry. I didn't mean to distract my man there." And sort of like bluster and go ruff, 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 ruff.
Brushing the dust off of him, that kind of thing.
Well, Tracy slips in there.
So, Tracy, you're going for the bag?
Yeah. I will, of course, use dexterity larceny to do a... Or maybe not larceny. Let's see.
I think larceny may be a good idea in this case, or athletics, if you like.
Yeah, I think, yeah, because I was more going for the, yeah, physical.
If you're going for the bag itself, rather than its contents, I would say go for athletics. And importantly, what I want to know is, once you've picked it up, if you pick it up, are you just running with it out of the club?
I think I hope they can distract them enough for me to take a peek, at least, and then maybe return it to him.
Okay.
So that I can, "Oh, you dropped this," or something like that. Because I think it might cause a bit too much of a ruckus if we just swipe it and run.
Again, sir, I do apologise. When my master says turn around, I turn around.
Yes, 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 my bag. Okay, Tracy, athletics and dexterity, please.
1 8 and a 9.
1 8 and a 9. 1 8 is enough to grab a hold of it. The 9 is enough to take a peek inside through the buttoned top. And you can see in there what is undoubtedly a rod of bamboo.
A rod of bamboo.
Yeah, along with some other paraphernalia that you can't quite make out, but the bamboo is quite distinct. Like a blowpipe.
Oh my.
Maybe even not like a blowpipe, but a blowpipe. Give that back.
I kind of... of course, you dropped this. Be careful. I'm so sorry. My friend can be so clumsy.
He snatches it from you. The contents are quite valuable. Now let me pass.
Oh, of course, sir. After you. Again, I do apologise.
Bloody fools. And he walks through you.
I quickly whisper to Taylor, "What was in the bag?"
"A blowgun. Yes, a blowgun."
I'm not the smartest tool in the shed, but if he's got a blowpipe on him and he works for that Lord What's-His-Name... Well, I think we have a suspect.
I suspect we have more than a suspect.
I suspect you're right, and I smile at my pun.
If this were episodic, it would end at this point with a freeze frame and credits, but it isn't, so we continue.
These are the credits of superstition and fantasy. Okay, so, yeah, I'm going to... You sort of watch his course and see who he speaks to when he reaches the group.
He walks over to Lord Alton. He stands at attention beside Lord Alton, who takes a while to acknowledge him, and then Lord Alton, rather lazily, beckons him to lean over. They exchange some muted words. Alton first nods, smiles, then scowls, says, "What? You didn't find it?" Well, get back there! Get back! And he's gesturing wildly. The butler speaks again in a low volume. Fine, we'll look tomorrow when it's calmed down. Can't get the staff, can you? He says to the people around him. No, you can't, says the man opposite him.
I lean over to the professor. So here's the question, Professor. Who are we going to be following? Are we going to go way outside and follow Lord... what's his name? Home? Or are we going to follow this butler and have some words?
Well, the Lord and some of his associates are decked out in the paraphernalia of this cult of Abaddon. And so, I think it may be unwise to approach them directly.
Well, what do you suggest then? You got any ideas, Miss Taylor?
Well, if they have something to do with Gregory's disappearance, and if they might be keeping him somewhere, then I reckon maybe this butler can take us to him.
Aye. I'm fine going outside for a bit and waiting for this butler to make his exit.
Okay, then. So, Davis, you head on outside. The rain is now abating. Are the other two of you, the Professor and Tracy, are you sticking around in the club to watch the goings on?
Yeah, I'm going to stay inside for the moment. But if, you know, if the dude leaves, I'll leave shortly afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I'll accompany Mr. Jones outside.
Okay.
I need a smoke.
Mm-hmm. The butler does ferry a few drinks back and forth to Lord Alton's table, but it's quite clear, Professor, that Alton is angry with the man. Go to the damn place tomorrow. I don't want to see you until the job is done. Yes, of course, sir. And the butler picks up the bag from the foyer. No, not from the foyer. He picks up the bag from where he deposited it and heads straight back out through the curtain. As he passes through the curtain, he then goes through the front door, and waiting outside for him on the pavement are our good friends, Davis Jones and our raconteur, Tracy.
So, I first of all survey the situation on the street. The rain's starting to clear, but I mean, are there lots of people on the street in this part of town?
Well, you're in Mayfair, so it's a pretty well-to-do area. There are a few people wandering about. It's not so late that the wanderers are going to be completely drunk. But no one's paying attention to the Colonial. If you're discreet and you hit him over the head, if that's your plan, you should be able to get away with it. If you got into a stand-up, drag-out brawl, people will pay attention.
Is there like a little side alley somewhere?
I'm going to say yes, why not?
I would like to say that's where we were sort of standing as he's going past, and I just am with Taylor. And I call out, "Oh, sure. Sorry to bother you, but the lady, apparently she picked up something from your bag. She wants to give it back to you. So sorry."
What? What? And he walks down the alley. Very good. Duplicity there, Davis.
I try to stand a bit like I'm holding something in my hand. So trying to sell this little lie.
He believes it. It's an excellent lie. He walks down the alley towards you. Craig, what is Davis doing?
As the individual walks down, I just gently move myself just so that I'll be behind him. I imagine he heads straight to Taylor, probably quite agitated.
Yeah, he's expecting her to be rifling through her handbag, basically.
And I just walk over slowly. The gun taken from my belt and just gently underneath my jacket, pointed at his side as I quietly remark, "Now, sir, I work somewhere between justice and vengeance. So when I say you're not going to move and make a sound, I assure you, you'd rather not move or make a sound if you want to be getting back to the manor and having all the doilies ready for your master.
Okay, and you have used equip there, so let's go for command and presence, please.
Wonderful, I do have a little bit of those.
And yeah, you gain an additional die for your equip.
Unfortunately, that is a colossal failure.
You can spend some of your rewrites to get rerolls. You've got 5 of them.
Actually, you know what? I have a better idea. Whatever happens next, maybe now be a good time to say this alleyway is a small set.
Okay. He cannot escape the alleyway.
Yes.
This was exactly what I was hoping to do. So, well done.
Okay.
And suddenly the camera zooms in to almost as if it's just the three of us in this alleyway set, and there's not another soul in the world.
And while the threat hasn't worked, he basically spits words at you. Says, I'm not afraid of some oaf with a gun. Get out of my way. And he tries to push past you. You won't be mugging me, and the police will be hearing of you.
At this, I sigh as my hand... First of all, I put the gun back, and the other hand just swiftly goes to clasp around his neck as I shove him against a wall.
No, we are not here to mug you, sweet sir. We're here to talk to you. See, a very, very dear friend of ours has gone missing, and we believe that you know something about his whereabouts.
So I'm going to say, as you both decided to act, that Davis did indeed push him against the wall as Tracy comes in with the charm offensive. I'm going to allow Tracy to still use persuasion, but I think it's going to be... You're not offering him anything, so I'm not going to say it's manipulation. I think it's going to be persuasion and presence.
Very well. Well, I think our main goal is for him not to call out or get... agitated in any way. We want to be able to talk to him properly.
Mm-hmm.
2 9s and a 10.
Excellent, okay. He snorts and he huffs. Listen, I'm just a hired help. I'm just a butler. You let me go, nothing bad will happen to you. I give you my word. I won't tell Lord Alton. I don't know anything about anyone missing. But you can tell he's lying.
You have listened to an episode of Red Moon Roleplaying, where we played They Came From Beyond the Grave. This is a sponsored adventure by our friends at Onyx Path Publishing. Look out for They Came From Beyond the Grave on Kickstarter. Game Master was the gentleman gamer, Matthew Dawkins, and we were joined by Jenny Brembay and John Burke. The music was from the Cthulhu Cryo Chamber Collaborations. Visit cryochamber.bandcamp.com or their YouTube channel for more dark ambient. We would like to give massive thanks to our champions of the Red Moon, Martin Hoyschober, Nastasha Rollerson, Simon Cooper, David, and Julia, for their generous support. And we would of course like to thank all of our other patrons. Without your support, the show would not be possible. If you want to support our work, please check us out on Patreon. You can get access to bonus campaigns for Cultivating Lost and Coriolis there, as well as get early and raw access to all of our recordings. You can also hear your name read on the show as a champion of the Red Moon, as well as play cult with us. Most importantly, that support is what keeps the show going, so do check us out there. Thank you for listening, and see you soon again.